tell us what are artificial colors and flavors, and why should we avoid them, and how should we avoid them?
Okay, sure. Let's start with artificial colors. They're the most blatant, the most obvious, in-your-face kinds of things of any of the additives out there. They are the simplest to avoid. Artificial colors have been around for over 100 years. They were originally made from coal tar oil. Today, however, they're made from petroleum, and the majority of food dyes, and I'm talking about not only the cereal with the neon colors, but those cute little bottles that come in the four-pack, you know, that you use for Easter eggs. I'm talking about the red velvet cake and all of those TV shows about bakers with their fluorescent frosting. Okay, the majority, and they're fun shows, but anyway, the majority of these dyes start out in petroleum refineries in China. Not only are they petrochemicals, but they're legally permitted to be contaminated with a variety of heavy metals, including mercury, lead, and arsenic. They're just not supposed to have too much of it in there.
Great.
Yeah, right. Isn't that wonderful? And, of course, the there are so many loopholes to those regulations that the amount of known carcinogens that are in food dyes is just really amazing. Another reason why we focus on them, they are so easy to avoid. Whatever is being made with red number 40 could just as easily be made with a natural coloring from a fruit source or from a vegetable source or even from a mineral. And there are only a handful of them that are still allowed to be used in foods. Most of them have been banned. And, you know, if you take a look at the only two red dyes that may legally be used in food in the U.S., there are two of them. One is red number 3, one is red number 40. You notice some missing numbers there?
Oh, what does that mean?
That means that all of the other numbers, the red 1, 2, 4, 5, et cetera, have either been discarded by the industry or banned by the FDA over the years.
Really?
So there are two sole survivors. Right. Now, red number 40 is known to cause a variety of health problems. Red number 3 is really notorious, and back in the 80s, the FDA tried very hard to get rid of it. But, you know, politics always trumps science. Money always wins. And so starting with the Reagan administration, the consumer protection laws started to get trashed and deteriorated to the point where it's just absurd. Another strange thing about food dyes is that just because a dye is banned from use in food, for example, red 27 or red 30 or 33, they are used for other things. For example, many of these are used as a pesticide. They aren't a dye added to the pesticide. They actually are the pesticide, and they're sprayed to kill the med fly, to kill marijuana crops. Red number 3, which is allowed in food, doubles as a pesticide. It's sprayed on manure piles to kill maggots, flies' eggs. So, yeah, they're pretty amazing things. But what is very shocking is that just because a dye has been banned from use in food, that doesn't mean that we're done with it. So medicine for children, pediatric medicine given to sick babies, is permitted to contain dyes that are too dangerous to put in food.
Oh, why is this okay? I don't get that.
I wish I knew. There is so much going on that is just astonishing and really absurd. And, of course, these same dyes are allowed to be put in topical lotions, cosmetics, et cetera. So you rub something on your child's skin, of course it's going to get absorbed. Or if you put it on your own skin, it will get absorbed into your body. So the whole dye thing is just crazy. Now, here's the good news, Kelly. Dyes are pretty much being ditched in England and the rest of Europe. The same companies that manufacture the artificially colored and flavored candies and snack foods and cake mixes and drinks and all of this stuff, these same multinational companies have a different version in England and are also changing the versions they're using in the rest of Europe. So if you get a strawberry sundae at McDonald's in London, it's going to have strawberries in it. If you get a strawberry sundae at McDonald's in the United States, it's going to have Red 40. And, of course, strawberry flavor.
That's so frustrating because, you know, you say that's good news because hopefully that's going to trickle over here. But you don't know. America is so screwed up in so certain ways, in so many ways, that it could be 25 years.
Well, you know, I've said that it could take longer for the information to get from England to the U.S. than it took for the pilgrims to get over here on the Mayflower. But, you know, the companies will do what they can get away with, basically. I mean, the food companies are not philanthropic organizations, you know. They're out, they're a business, and they're there to make money. And as long as their competition, the other food companies, use these fake dyes, they're very cheap, they're very powerful, they make a food stand out. If you remember a number of years ago, when green applesauce came out, green ketchup, that was the first one. The applesauce came later. Yeah, green ketchup, the company that made that ketchup got an enormous amount of free publicity. They made a lot of money, they sold a lot of ketchup. So by using a very inexpensive substance, a food dye, they were able to change red ketchup into green, and I used to be an art teacher, and I can tell you it takes a lot of dye to turn red into green. By doing this, they made money.
Well, this is how naive I was back then. I thought they were using
green tomatoes. A lot of people believe that, absolutely. No, it was red tomatoes, and the green came from petroleum, just like gasoline. I am encouraged because once people see that it can be done, it's just a matter of people being more aware of this. And I should also point out that as of July 20th, any company in the European Union that uses most of these dyes, there are a few little loopholes, but basically companies that use these dyes on their food are required to put warning labels that the dyes can cause attention and activity problems in children. Now, no company will ever put a warning on its product if it can avoid it. So basically, the candies and the foods in England and in Europe that are designed for children are free of the worst of the additives, the dyes. Some of them still have artificial flavor, but it's a big improvement. And it will happen when the FDA requires it or when enough consumers say, hey, why should I eat petroleum?
Right. So tell us then about the artificial flavors.
Yes, artificial flavors, I wish I could tell you about them, but frankly, I don't know very much about them. And the reason why, I know what they do, but the reason why I don't know much about them and the government doesn't know much about them is because the companies don't have to tell you anything about them. An artificial flavor is whatever a food company chooses to put in its food, and nobody pays attention to what it is. There's no testing done. Even the FDA has no clue. They don't care to know what's in it. It's the theory is, oh, well, a little bit won't hurt. So you can put anything you want into a food and call it an artificial flavoring.
Wow. So what about natural flavors? Natural flavors are okay.
Natural flavors are okay if they really are natural flavors. Most of the time when something says natural flavor, it's going to be okay, but it is a sneaky way to hide monosodium glutamate. See, the government regulations are basically, well, let's just be kind and say they're inadequate, grossly inadequate.
They're crap, I'll say it for you.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I like that. So, you know, we would like to believe that the agency that is paid by our taxpayer dollars, and I will say they're starting to do some good things. The new people in the FDA, there have been a few good things that are happening. But for the most part, we have had years and years of the agency actually getting in the way of consumers finding healthful truthful information and healthful products. The FDA has become one of the worst impediments to people, you know, being healthy and finding good food. It's a shame.
They don't want things labeled. They don't want us to know what's in there. Because I think all the big companies are just paying them off to keep the truth off the label.
Right. And money tends to always really speak the loudest. One of the problems actually was the fault of Congress. A number of years ago, Congress said that the FDA should get money from the food industry in order to help cover some of their expenses. Well, that's a really, really bad idea. And we see what has happened, that the FDA, critics of the FDA say that their main focus is keeping the food companies happy. And they have totally forgotten that they were put in place, the agency was developed to protect consumers. And it's not just the FDA. There have been horrible abuses over the years at USDA and at EPA and even the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. There have been many, many abuses of the responsibility of these people. And those folks who work in the agencies who blow the whistle or who raise red flags are very often punished for doing this. So it's really a very, it's a very, very broken system. So that's why consumers, you know, we're kind of on our own. Now, the good news is it really isn't that complicated. Once you understand a few basics, it really is a whole lot simpler than it sounds.
What do you know about preservatives? Why should we avoid them, and how best should we avoid them?
Well, the term preservative sounds like a kind of a good thing, like it's going to keep the food fresh. Well, it really doesn't do that. The preservatives in your food, in most cases, are there because the food manufacturer will lose money if the food spoils or if the food looks like it has spoiled. For example, the idea that you can keep a cereal on the shelves for years, I haven't checked cereal labels lately, but the idea that food can be out there for a very, very long time without ever spoiling, you know, it really isn't the case at all. So when you see BHA or BHT, these are two preservatives, have been added to the packaging material to retain freshness or to protect the consumer or something like that, what it means is we guys don't want to lose money. If the food spoils, and it may be very, very old and not appear to have spoiled, but if the food spoils, the manufacturer loses money. The manufacturer does not want to lose money, so this is why he uses these various chemicals. Now, the good news is that things like BHA and BHT are used in very small quantity. The bad news, however, is that they're incredibly potent. Like the food dyes, these preservatives are made from petroleum. That's petroleum as in gasoline. And they are so powerful that even a tiny amount is enough to keep food from appearing to have spoiled. So we stay away from them. The reason why we choose the things to avoid in the Feingold program is because not only are they harmful, but we have seen that they trigger behavior problems and learning problems, and that's our main focus. There are a lot of ways to avoid it. For example, if you look at, if you look at several bags of potato chips, you may find that some of them have BHA or BHT and some of them don't. Why? Well, different manufacturers have different ways of doing things. So if you can find a version without a preservative, of course I wouldn't keep it in your kitchen pantry for a long time, you'd want to use it soon. If you can find a version without a preservative, why not buy that? Another thing that you can do, and this is often something you'll find in cereals, is look for something that is preserved with either vitamin E, vitamin E tocopherol, it may say just tocopherol. Look for those words. Tocopherol and vitamin E, that means that they have used a natural ingredient, vitamin E, which is a natural preservative. So if the cereal says that it's preserved with vitamin E or with tocopherol, then that's good because they can use something that has no harmful effects on you and will keep the the product fresh. Actually, there are many, many natural foods and herbs and plants, et cetera, that can be used as preservatives. Cherries are a preservative. Rosemary is a preservative. There are lots and lots of natural preservatives out there that can be used in place of the petrochemicals, the BHA, BHT, and TBHQ. The problem is that as long as consumers are willing to buy the foods that are preserved with the synthetic preservatives, they are much, much cheaper for the manufacturer. And if people will buy this stuff, they're going to continue to make it. If they use something like rosemary or some other natural preservatives, it would probably increase their cost by just a little bit. And don't forget that food business is a business, and their goal is to sell as much as they can and make as high a profit as they can. So as long as consumers will buy this, they'll provide it. If consumers stop buying things with BHA, BHT, and TBHQ, then they're going to stop using them. Now, one other thing I should point out, Kelly, is these preservatives are very sneaky. They can be in the food and not be listed. Here's an example. Supposing you wanted to buy a cracker that was all natural, and you found a brand and it said 100% natural, no preservatives, pure vegetable shortening. That doesn't mean what it says. And the reason why is that the baker who makes the cracker itself, that's the last stage of processing. And the baker only needs to put on the ingredient label the things that he added in his bakery. So if he orders the shortening or the oil from the oil manufacturer and tells the oil people to put the preservatives in, and they put it in at their plant and then they ship it to the baker doesn't have to list it because he didn't put it in. The word natural has no legal definition. Preservative, well, that's one that lawyers could have a lot of fun with. So it's not, you know, you have to be very skeptical of labels. Now, part of the work that the Feingold Association does is to actually find out about this. We find out whether there is BHA or BHT hidden in the shortening or in the vitamin fortification or the pan grease in breads, or maybe in the packaging material. We uncover all of these hidden things, and then when a product is really free of them, then that product gets added to our list of acceptable foods. We have books running over 200 pages now of just acceptable brand name foods.
Two follow-up questions to that,
sure.
Then. So, you know how we've had this conversation before about how, you know, I'm more about kind of avoiding the boxes and the bags and all this as
mm-hmm.
much as possible. But
mm-hmm.
even, I mean, I still buy a box of organic crackers once in a while. So
sure.
Would an organic cracker be guaranteed to not have any of these nasty preservatives?
That's a very good question. It would not be guaranteed, but it's a really good bet. Things like organic, things like gluten-free products, they tend to be much more pure. The funny thing is, I can't really explain why or how, but when families start using our program, within a few weeks, they just develop a real awareness, and they develop the skill to look through what is phony and what is real. And I don't exactly know how it happens, but it's something you get pretty good at in a hurry. For example, there are a lot of names that disguise monosodium glutamate. It isn't too hard to teach yourself what those things are and to recognize those. There are a lot of ways that companies get around this. And for example, a product is advertised as having no preservatives and no artificial flavors. Well, my question is, okay, what about the artificial colors? Or if it says no artificial colors, no artificial flavors, then I would say, how about the preservatives?
Right.
So you become a little bit wise to the ways and the sneaky things that the companies try to get away with.
Well, then what are some of the other names for preservatives? You mentioned, I think, two or three of them, but are there more that we should be aware of?
Well, yeah. For example, sometimes when a product or an additive develops a bad reputation, such as BHT, instead of listing it as BHT, because it's all in caps and it really stands out in an ingredient list, they'll list it by butylated hydroxytoluene. Yeah.
It's those words that we can't pronounce.
Right, absolutely, the words you can't pronounce. Now, a lot of people say, well, if you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. And yes and no. There are vitamin fortifications that are added to products that have really funny-sounding names, and they're perfectly okay. And then there are other things that sound okay, like flavor, you know, that should be fine, or even natural flavor, which can basically mean anything. Again, it's not a simple matter. It's kind of complicated. However, it's something that as you use it, it really gets simpler and simpler. Now, your suggestion about not using a lot of processed foods, that's a very good way to avoid a lot of these unwanted chemicals. However, the Feingold approach is a little different than that. Frankly, we want the best of both worlds. We want it all. I want to be able to go to my neighborhood supermarket and buy a frozen dinner that I can bring home and put together in very short order. I want to pay very little for it. I want it to be nutritious, healthy, free of the additives, and inexpensive. Have I left anything out? And then, of course, I want chocolate for dessert. So we want it all. We want to be able to eat at fast food restaurants, buy processed foods. You know, we want everything. And the interesting thing, Kelly, is I can do that. I can go to my neighborhood supermarket. I can pick up a dinner for two for $5.99 that only takes a few minutes to prepare and tastes great and is free of the additives. So, yes, if you cut out boxes and packaged foods, you'll probably have a purer product. However, you might not need to do that because processed foods can be free of the harmful additives, too. Just because they're processed or packaged doesn't automatically mean that there's going to be something wrong with them. It often does.
I totally understand that why you teach that because, like you had explained to me before, you're talking to people who have called you and their children are sick and you don't, mm-hmm. and they don't know where to turn and you don't want to freak them out and tell them that they have to cook every single meal from scratch. And I understand
Absolutely.
All that. But the only thing I would add to what you just said is that I can see that like as a, you know, for someone who maybe is a little further along in their journey,
right.
You know, that would be maybe a once in a great while kind of thing, or maybe somebody in the beginning stages who is just slowly moving to more whole
mm-hmm.
foods. But the reason that I wouldn't want someone to stay there forever is
mm-hmm.
just because, well, I think that you know, maybe they got it cheap and they got it without a lot of the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I still think that it's not nutrient-packed like a meal at home could be. So
I'm sure you're right about that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So. And really, this is the approach that we take in Feingold. We're really quite laid back about the whole thing. The things that we are not laid back about, though, are the dyes, the preservatives I mentioned, the synthetic sweeteners, especially aspartame, and the preservatives. And the reason why we're pretty hard-nosed about those is that we know one of the wrong kind of candy, one piece of candy of the wrong kind, one sip of the bug juice. We know that this stuff is so potent using the red toothpaste that this is enough to really set a child off. And so what we say is, okay, there are really two routes to go. If you are having problems and you really need to see some results, try it our way. Get rid of every last bit of these synthetic dyes, and frankly, they're not very hard to get rid of, and the other additives, and give it a very careful test for a couple of weeks just to see what happens. And what usually happens is anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks, more likely a week or less, most parents will see a significant change in their child. So this is really the Feingold protocol. Let's do a careful test for a short time and see what happens. And we guide people and we show them how to do this test, how to find the things they want. Now, there's another aspect of the work we do. supposing we're talking with somebody who isn't really suffering from any particular problems. They don't have a family member who's having trouble. They just want to have a better diet. They're feeling good, but they think they can have a better diet. In that case, we would say, well, just start out by getting rid of things like food dyes. It's easy to do. You look for color followed by number. Look for things like red 40 or yellow 5. Just get rid of those for a while and see what happens. And then when you're ready, try taking away the artificial flavors, et cetera. So we really have two paths. And one is the casual, let's just eat better food, which, by the way, usually costs less than the junky food. And the other approach is, hey, we're having a serious problem. We want to see changes as quickly as possible. So the consumer decides which way they want to go.
I can't imagine, or I can imagine, how comforted a mom must feel who calls and talks to you on the phone. Your voice is so calming, and you could just kind of help lead them out of all that pain that they've probably been going through. That must just be such a fun job for you to help these young parents.
It is. You know, I feel sorry for people who have other jobs because I can't imagine anything more exciting than this. And it is so common, and it particularly used to be very common when most of the people contacted us by phone before the internet. And you would hear this woman, and you could just feel the pain in her voice. And I knew that she did not want to call us because she had this this image that, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm already at the end of my rope, and these people are going to tell me to do all this hard stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where I thought, okay, what can I say to this poor woman that won't send her screaming out of the room? You know, what can I say to her? So what I would say is, do you ever use frozen waffles? And the answer, of course, was always yes. And I would say, well, what kind do you use? And the answer was always Eggo home style with the yellow 5 and yellow 6. And so I would say to her, well, instead of using that version of Eggo, could you use this version? And at that time, it's no longer okay, but at that time, the buttermilk waffle was fine. So I'd say, instead of buying the home style, could you buy the buttermilk? And it was like, there would be a long silence, and I could just hear her mind going, what? Of course I could. That's a no-brainer. And then I would say, well, can you buy the Breyers ice cream in the black box instead of the white box? And again, it was, well, sure. I mean, anybody can do that. And within a few minutes, this woman who felt so powerless would realize she can change things. When she takes her cart down the aisle of the supermarket, she has total control of what goes in that cart. What goes in that cart, in turn, has a lot to do with how her child's going to function and behave. And it's such a simple thing to do, but people think it's going to be really complicated and difficult, and it doesn't have to be at all.
Well, I'm so excited. I'm going to put this interview at the very beginning of my class because I want people to know how huge what you just said is. Because I'm so ingrained into the Weston Price lifestyle, when you first told me this at one time, I was thinking in my head, no, you're telling people
they can eat a candy bar. Oh my God.
Yeah. You're telling them they can just choose one box over another. No. But then last time we spoke, what you said made so much sense to me because you said that is the first step. That's what a mom can do right then. And then when she feels that power of how that change in that shopping cart can change her child's life and their whole family, and not just children. I mean, adults are dealing with all sorts of health issues as well. But when they see the power of what they chose in that shopping cart, it changes everything, and then they're ready to take more steps and more steps and ready to increase their power in their life.
Absolutely, and really you epitomized it. You described it very well there. Most people, before they find out about this sort of thing, and myself certainly was included, most people don't really understand that what you eat matters. You know, you eat something because you like the taste of it or it's on sale or something like that. But I didn't look at food in the same way that I did once I understood that, first of all, that Jell-O, that cherry Jell-O, didn't have any cherries in it. I mean, I never thought about that. It's cherry jello. There's a picture of the cherry on the front. Of course it's got cherries in it. And, hey, those funny names on the back. Gee, if there was anything harmful, the Food and Drug Administration wouldn't let it be put in our food, right? Now I'll pause while everybody laughs. You know?
Right.
Okay. But once I realized, I mean, it's such an epiphany, food matters. And by just making a simple switch in the supermarket, you can get rid of the worst stuff. And what typically happens, even if the mom continues to buy processed foods but buys those without the worst of the additives, it's very, very typical that she's going to see what I call the big wow. She's going to see, oh, my gosh, my child didn't, you know, jump up from the dinner table 20 times. It didn't take us 2 hours to get him to go down to sleep. He only threw one little tantrum instead of, you know, big ones, et cetera. Once the mom makes that connection, that's where she's opened up to the idea food matters. What I choose makes a big difference. And that woman who knew all she had to do was switch waffles as the first step or buy the ice cream that was more natural, within a few weeks, she would become pretty savvy, and after a few months, she'd be very good at being able to identify what's okay. And I'm not just talking about products in the grocery store. She could go to a potluck supper and glance at the food and know, okay, this is good, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Or go to a restaurant and know what to get.
Yeah, I think that skill, just like you said, it comes with time. And
yeah.
You can't be too hard on yourself for not knowing that right off the bat. But
absolutely.
I think the important thing, though, is to kind of increase your awareness, because
mm-hmm.
that's when it starts to change. It's the people who continue to tell me, like you said, oh, a little bit of that's not going to matter. It's not going to hurt anything. Well, oh, my gosh, a little bit of that all day long and all week
mm-hmm.
long,
yeah.
And you've got some major issues.
Well, you raise a really important point, because what little testing is that has been done on things like food additives, they test one single additive, you know, and they usually test to see whether the animal dies right away or develops tumors. Of course, some of the tests, they actually surgically remove the tumors. I mean, the shenanigans that go on behind the scenes are astonishing.
Wow.
But nobody eats just one food additive at a time. And after many years of not even being aware of the collective effects of all these chemicals, a few years ago, some research was done in England, in Liverpool, where the researcher took two additives and combined them and compared the effects. And the way it worked was this. What they do is they take an additive and they place it on a nerve cell. I think it's, I don't know whether it's an amphibian or sea life or something like that. But anyway, it's a way to test to see whether a particular chemical causes nerve damage. And so they tested monosodium glutamate, and they found that, yes, it caused some nerve damage. They tested blue dye and found the same thing. Now, when they combined the MSG and the blue dye, the damage was four times as great.
They did
the same thing with aspartame and yellow dye. By themselves, each one caused nerve damage, but when they combined the two, the damage was seven times as great. Now, just imagine a child eating a bowl full of fluorescent cereal and having his purple dinosaur vitamins and his orange juice that really isn't orange juice after all, and the neon pink amoxicillin for his ear infections and the grape Dimetapp, you know. Okay, a child in one meal can be ingesting countless numbers of different chemicals that are all interacting with each other. And who knows what it's doing? It's doing a lot of harm. But after you start to be aware of this, giving up things like Fruit Loops is not a hardship. It's something that people choose to do. It's, you know, sometimes people feel sorry for me, you know, I can't eat this or that. Well, I can. And frankly, I'm on a pure enough diet that if I did, I wouldn't notice anything. But it isn't that. It's that I'd really rather not. You know? I mean, if you offered me a dinner made with spoiled meat, I'd probably say, no, thank you.
Right.
Well, to me, that's what these things look like.
Yeah, that's how fast food looks to me now.
I'm
not even tempted anymore because it just, you learn, after you learn enough about it, then you're just so grossed out, it doesn't even look good anymore.
Absolutely. Well, those flat little, pathetic little burgers never look good to me. And we get a lot of calls for questions about, I won't name the restaurant, but they specialize in chicken. And I was just on their website looking at the long list of chemical ingredients.
I know. I did a post about that recently. They were trying to help women with breast cancer. That's what was really sick. You know, that they had this big, what was it, buckets for the cure.
Oh, boy.
And then you go and look at the ingredient labels, and you're thinking, okay, they're trying to help women who have cancer.
Yeah.
What is wrong with this picture?
Yeah, absolutely. One of my colleagues said that she typically would eat 3 meals a day at a drive-in. She would go to 3 different drive-ins. One was her favorite for breakfast, one lunch, and one dinner. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but this happens. And once you understand that not only is food important, but that you have choices and that you don't have to give up things you like, then little by little, you gradually start to change what you're doing because it just makes sense to you. And yes, I eat my chocolate cake, but I don't eat it every day. Yes, I buy processed foods. But frankly, I have found it is so easy to make most of our things from scratch that I do that because I prefer it.
Right.
So it gets easier, and it's just a matter of learning.